Hello and welcome to the As Yet Unnamed London Theatre Podcast for the 11th of September 2011. My name's TRP Watson and I'm joined this week by Glenn Pierce, Ian Foster and Rev Stan. First of all, we are going to talk about Rock of Ages at the Shaftesbury Theatre. This looks rather splendid, Glenn. Tell me about it.
Depends how you define splendid.
It was a bit of a hit on Broadway, wasn't it? And I've seen one or two very positive reviews, but I've also been told that that's because those are people who loved it on Broadway.
It is. I think this is going to be one of those Marmite love or hate shows. It's, as you say, being successful on Broadway. It actually started life in Los Angeles in 2006. It moved to Broadway 2009 and has now crossed the Atlantic, as you say, to the Shaftesbury. It's in previews at the moment, so the usual caveats apply about preview performances. It's actually got quite a long preview performance. The press night's not until the 27th of September. It's a jukebox musical, and it's looking at the soft rock, I presume is the best way of describing it, of the 1980s.
I prefer the term poodle rock myself, but yes. After the hairstyles, yes.
Indeed. Yes, it is big hair and lots of glittery makeup, and that's just the men. It features the songs of likes of Bon Jovi, Styx, Twisted Sister, Poison, and there is a plot there somewhere. Loosely, it's set in the late 80s. It's set in a Hollywood bar stroke club called the Bourbon Room. And it's about an aspiring rocker who works in the bar, who falls in love with a wannabe actress. He wants to be in a rock band, she wants to be an actress. The club owner is desperate to keep his bar running. There are some German investors who'd rather knock it down and build a shopping mall. And that's about as complex as the plot goes. This is one of those shows that it's really difficult to review. You try and separate out the performances, which on the whole are very good. There's some great energy. Rock, it's not the easiest for musical theatre performers. Perhaps heavy rock or even sort of soft rock, poodle rock, whichever one you call it, isn't the easiest genre for them to sing. But there's some great performances in the piece and some real energy. Unfortunately, the plot itself doesn't hold up. It doesn't take itself seriously. There are quite a few asides to the audience mocking the structure of the show, mocking musicals in general. But it's not done with enough tongue-in-cheek, really, for any conviction. There's lines, they wave one of the programs around at one point, pointing out that the photos in it are of the American cast. So there's some nice in-jokes, but they really need to work on a script. It's fun, it's entertaining if you listen to the music, but the music itself isn't strong enough to carry the show. Before the show, if you pop to the toilets, they've got the Tannoy System playing sort of sounds of the 80s, and a lot of those songs are much better known than the ones that actually appear in the show. You've got the likes of Bon Jovi's Living on a Prayer, and you think, oh yeah, you can imagine that fitting into a musical. It's quite, you know, a strong song. You think, yeah, you could fit a story around that. It doesn't appear, and that's the problem, that the strongest music is actually that's playing during the interval as sort of backing music. It gets the audience up on its feet. They're dancing by the end because it is that sort of show where they encourage the audience to get up and dance. All the audiences, when you go in, are handed a fake lighter. It's a battery-powered lighter that you can wave in the air doing the power ballads. So there's some, you know, cheesy moments, there's some fun moments. I just think this is really going to struggle in the current economic climate in the West End. We've seen lots of musicals, big musicals, open and close fairly shortly. The Shaftesbury is a big theatre. It's not had a great history over the recent years. Apart from Hairspray, nothing's really run there very long. And I have a feeling Rock of Ages will add to that. You take your hats off to the cast for some talented performances. It's just not strong enough to, I think, get a audience in for 8 shows a week.
Yeah, we always have to be careful about saying things like that when the around the corner, or you know, just up the road, there's we Will Rock You has been running for an age. But
I've been wrong before.
I mean, it's quite possible to be wrong, but it's, yeah, but we just have to be a little bit careful. So, Ian, what did you think about Rock of Ages?
I have to admit to not really being a fan. I would actually invite. I have to say, I wouldn't have picked to see this myself because I'm not a huge fan of jukebox shows. I'm certainly not a fan of rock music. And so it wasn't something that instantly appealed to me, but I was invited and I did think, yeah, you know what, I'm going to give this a shot. I'll see how it goes. I actually did find that I didn't like it for a different reason though. I mean, a lot of the music I hadn't heard of ever, the bands like Styx and Whitesnake, I don't know what these bands sing, so that wasn't for me. It's extremely well performed, lots of enthusiasm in the cast, to be sure, but the way the play is structured with this kind of dual focus of telling a traditional musical theatre story in the closing down of the bar and this love story, but then also poking fun at musical theatre with the satirical side of it, with Simon Lipkin's narrator, it just doesn't fit together. It doesn't work because, on the one hand, you've got a brilliantly piss-taking dance routine, kind of a Mickey take of expressive dance. And it's really, really funny. It's done to Can't Fight This Feeling, one of the songs I did know. But then it sat, the song before it is a normal musical, a normal number you get in a musical, complete with choreography to a rock song done deadly seriously. And then afterwards comes this kind of, kind of fell flat for me, but a dramatic rendition of Every Rose Has Its Thorn. And so it didn't gel. The show is trying to have it cake and eat it in both poking fun at musical theatre whilst also telling a musical theatre story. And it just doesn't do it well enough. But everyone else seemed to be enjoying it. It was never going to be my kind of show. So we'll see. It could go down well.
Yeah, there do seem to be a lot of dyed-in-the-wool fans for it, aren't there?
Yeah, I think a lot of people who I know who like it were fans of it from Broadway. I don't know how it compares to that show, but the initial response does seem to have been fairly positive. But I just couldn't... It made me uneasy as a show, watching it. So I just didn't. I wasn't a fan.
So move on to Rev Stan. You saw Electricity, which is a site-specific work in Victoria.
Yes. This is it's based on what was originally a radio play by Murray Gold, who's written several radio plays, and he's also a composer as well. Apparently he's does some of the incidental music for Doctor Who.
He is the main composer. He is the person who wrote the new theme or adapted the new theme. And yes, and they've heavily, there's a lot of music in Doctor Who, which he was the main composer for.
There you go. Anyway, so this is his radio play that's now being put on as a site-specific piece in an old office. It's it works quite well because the street is sort of partially residential and partially office, and even though it's an office space, it's supposed to be a flat that is being decorated. So you go in and there's plastic sheeting everywhere. There's walls that are partially painted. There's actually a smell of fresh paint, so for a it really does feel like you are in sort of the middle of a decorating project. The story is that you've got the three decorators, Leo, Jakey and Jakey's son, Busy, who are working on this room, which is going to be a quiet room for a lady called Catherine. and she's quite restrictive about when they can turn the power on and when they can turn it off, when they can have the water off. So they've got quite far behind. There's also the problem that Jakey spends a lot of time sitting around reading the sun and prevaricating and not actually doing much work. This Catherine storyline is that her she's grieving the death of her mother, and as part of that grief process has pushed to one side her boyfriend, Michael, who sort of sees the completion of this quiet room as sort of like of her getting over her grieving period and them getting back together. So there's sort of various levels of tension going on. You've got the tension trying to get the job finished. You've got the tension of sort of the relationship between Catherine and her boyfriend. But the title of the play, Electricity, comes from the fact that there's a cable just sitting bare, electricity cable in the corner that is quite dangerous. And there's lots of sort of where, you know, don't go near the cable. And there's lots of japes and that pretending to push each other near this electricity cable. And you know that somebody is going to get a shock at some point. I think it's one of those plays, it's enjoyable while you're watching it. It's a couple of hours of mildly entertaining. It's nothing that is deep and particularly meaningful. It works very well as a site-specific piece. I think if you hadn't got that sort of novelty factor, I think it would lose, you know, some of the entertainment value in it, but it's sort of like, you know, it's a reasonably nicely scripted. The acting is pretty good. The only slight weak performance is the actor that plays the boyfriend, who I thought was a slightly wooden, but the rest of the performances are all very good. And rarely for a site specific piece is they actually have a bar, so you can actually get a drink in the interval, which is quite nice. So yes, it's only on for a week. If you want to see something that's a little bit different and sit sort of, you know, in a room that's being decorated with actors that are doing the decorating, then go and see it.
Yeah, I wonder if they have to remake everything, or every night, or they are actually fully decorating it. It'll be finished by the time the play's finished.
Well, most of the walls are painted. There's bits that sort of get revealed during the interval that have obviously been done but are covered up and stuff. So it's obviously a bit more dismantled when you come in, and they put sort of bits on that make it look more complete. It's probably a little bit of a plot spoiler there that they do finish the job. But anyway.
We're going to talk about Decade. This is a Headlong production at St. Catherine's Dock. Now, Ian, you saw this. What can you tell me about this? It marks the 10th anniversary of 9/11, the attacks on 9/11 in New York, doesn't it?
Yes. Rupert Gould has brought together, I think, 20 different writers from the UK and the USA, and commissioned them to respond to 9/11 in one way or another. So we have a vast range of little short plays which cover a multitude of subjects, because they, only a few of them sort of deal with the attack directly. A lot of them sort of look at the lives of people who have been affected, both in directly and indirectly, over the last 10 years. So you've got people who survived, people who were bereaved, people who've been studying, people who are exploiting it, and the sort of the tourism trade that followed afterwards. And the Gould has sort of merged them together into a 3-hour-long epic, full of choreography from Scott Ambler, lots of music from Adam Cork. It's very much a sibling to Earthquakes in London, if anyone saw that. It's visually very similar, and in Miriam Booth's design, it's people are sat in cabaret style, people are dancing on tables and things, and so it's quite unconventional If it's your first experience, it's recognisably headlong, especially if you've seen Earthquakes in London. In terms of the actual play itself, it's largely successful, I think, in that it just because it presents so many different viewpoints, and so it provides so many points of reference for people to come in. You get a clear opinion of people just delivering monologues, which are powerfully effective. There are then little stories which manage to touch the heart as well. The effect on the Arab American community is one that's done quite beautifully, and the people exploiting their grief tourism around the crash site is actually quite good as well. There's a guy selling gifts. He capitalizes on the women who get highly emotional, and in order to sleep with them, he's actually from Panama, but because he's slightly dark-skinned, he pretends to be an Arab. And so I mean, some of it's a bit close to the bone, some of it's quite straightforward. A slight reservation is the format means that it's pick and mix. At the end, there isn't a sort of end result. Really, you know, there's no sort of building to a culmination, which is fine. But at the same time, you kind of left feeling, well, yeah, that was 20 different opinions on 9/11, none of which really take into account a global perspective outside of the UK and the USA. You know, there aren't any foreign, for want of a better word, voices in the playwright team, and so I couldn't help but feel it's a little bit narrow in focus, because it's taken its starting point as 9/11 being the defining event of our time. Yet that word "our," "we," essentially,
it
that
doesn't apply to everybody, does it?
No. It here in this context, "we" means the USA and the UK. Which is slightly bizarre. Why are we co-opting an American tragedy? Or if he's actually aiming for that global perspective, why not commission an Arab playwright, an African playwright? There's someone out just to really make a more global voice to the play. I mean, you don't really notice it so much while watching it. It was only sort of thinking about it and looking at the names of the playwrights afterwards. But I just felt slightly uneasy that it becomes this UK co-opting of a US tragedy, but then I think that relates more to my feelings about 9/11. Anyway, I think we perhaps overestimate its importance in the global scheme of things, but that's a personal opinion. Okay. It's extremely well performed. There's lots of people playing lots of roles. I think Tobias Menzies, Charlotte Randall, and Emma Fielding were my favourite performers.
Okay, so Glenn, tell me what you thought about Decade.
I thought it's one of the strongest pieces I've seen this year. I saw it Saturday evening, so the eve of 9/11, and it was quite a charged atmosphere. Large proportion of Americans in the audience. And the way it's staged, you actually get a chance sort of to chat because you're sat around the tables. I actually went with someone that spent a lot of time actually at the World Trade Center, and the set is the replica of the Windows of the World restaurant. And they actually found it quite uncomfortable. The set is actually uncannily accurate, and quite a few people talking during the interval as well found it, in a way, the play itself not as uncomfortable as they feared, but the actual setting they found sort of quite uncomfortable, sort of being in the replica of a building, obviously, that's no longer there. There's been quite a few changes, I think, since Ian saw it in an early preview. The play sort of subplot says, you know, two towers, 10 years, 20 writers. And buying the playtext last night and having a flick through, there's at least three or four plays that are in the published script that don't actually or didn't appear in last night's performance. So it looks like some edits have been made. There's still possibly a couple of other short scenes in the play overall that could be cut to sort of no dramatic loss. There's a couple of scenes. There's one set in a psychiatrist that doesn't really add much sort of insight into the sort of reactions to 9/11. There's just a couple other scenes that possibly could be cut and shortened. But overall, considering there are that many writers, it's an amazingly cohesive evening. Rupert Gould has worked with magic sort of stitching these pieces together. It's running still, even with those cuts, at just a couple of minutes under 3 hours. But it doesn't seem like that. The time flies past. We got to the interval and I sort of glanced at my watch and thought, well, that's a really short first half, you know. But it's not. It's, you know, near enough an hour and a half for the first half. But the stories are so gripping and they are short pieces that are held together by a sort of overarching storyline of three widows meeting each anniversary of 9/11. But being as they are short pieces, I think it flows very well. The staging, as you sort of expect from headline, is stunning, but it doesn't overpower the piece. It provides, you know, this really immersive atmosphere. And I just found it really emotional last night. It's thought-provoking. It gives a great insight, not only into the sort of victims of 9/11 in the Twin Towers, their families, but also New York and even the world at whole. There's a scene actually set in London. So it looks at loss, grief, family linked to the, you know, terrorist events, but it, you know, it's not necessarily 9/11. You could look at it as the 7th of July bombings, perhaps IRA terrorism, or just generally human loss. Very cleverly done. I think I'm going to struggle to see something stronger this year. I've been raving about it to everyone I've spoken to in the last 24 hours, so I'm sort of coming across as a bit of a decade fanatic, but I think it's really strong. I think they're still tweaking some of the plays, so it'll be interesting to see, you know, if someone goes towards the end of the run, sort of in a couple of weeks' time, if they've made any more changes. But I would recommend anyone that can get a ticket, head off to St. Catherine's Dock in London. Say it's an old trading floor, so do allow plenty of time to find it. Latecomers aren't admitted, but well worth seeing.
Yeah, I think Ian had a problem with it. He's not with us at the moment, but he did have some problem with it, because not with the play so much, but the way that we've co-opted this, you know, as if it's our tragedy too, and that a lot of the voices are sort of UK, they're English speaking, you know, they're English speaking world voices, they're UK and America, they're not other people's perspective, you know, there's no sort of Arabic perspective or Eastern European perspective.
I disagree with that. Aleki Blythe, yes, is an English playwright, but two of her plays within the piece use her, as she has with London Road and a lot of her other work, are verbatim theatre. So she's gone to the mosque, she's gone to Islam, she's gone to the Arabic speaking world. So although she has put that together, the voices that she's recorded are Islamic voices, they are Arabic voices that are speaking. And it surprised me, looking through the program and the playtext, I had assumed that Headlong, you know, hadn't done a huge amount of research into it before, that Headlong had used mainly English writers, and I thought it was strange that an English company doing this big response to 9/11. But a large proportion of the writers are actually New York based writers. So yes, it's very much perhaps an American slant to it rather than the world slant, but it's not a rose tinted view by any means of 9/11. It's not glorifying America, it's not a rose tinted view by any means of the terrorist attacks and the political aftermath. There's one scene which, actually, I have to say, is one of the weakest ones, looking at one of the female interrogators at Abu Ghraib. And, you know, those notorious photos where you saw the American soldiers interrogating.
Having the
prisoners on dog leads. Yeah. So it doesn't, it's not by no means pro-American. She comes across as a, you know, quite unlikable character. I have to say, I don't think that particular short scene in the play fits well with the overall piece, and that would be one of the ones, if I was trying to reduce the running time down a bit, would cut that play. But as an overall look at the impacts afterwards, I don't think it is necessarily focused in on America and the UK. I think it does give a worldview. And I say, it surprised me how brutally honest it was. And it's no way, a rose-tinted look at the events of that day and sort of the implications afterwards. And I have to say, America doesn't come off particularly well in the piece. It doesn't take sides, but it's there's some speeches, again verbatim speeches from Obama and Bush included, and the rhetoric they come out with doesn't sort of endear you to the American dream at times. But I think if you just take it as a, you know, it's difficult given the subject, but if you can sort of step away from the 9/11 backdrop and look at it as a insight into human emotions, you know, in the ensemble play, a countless number of characters, it's a real strong piece looking at just human grief, loss, regardless of the background.
Right, we're going to move on now to the new thing at the Arc. Cola, directed by Marcello Magni and starring Catherine Hunter. It's Tell Them That I Am Young and Beautiful. Rostand, this is the first time you've seen Catherine Hunter in anything, who's always a treat, I think, to watching her act. She's an actress I've always regretted the things I haven't seen her in, and I try to always to catch whatever she's in. So how was she?
She was amazing. Say, it's my first time seeing her, and I would literally beg, borrow, and steal to see anything else that she does from now on. It's incredible. She's obviously a very physical actress. She can, you know, change her physical performance just as readily as she can her vocal performance, and this play is the perfect vehicle for her. It's actually seven separate stories. There's a cast of five, although the fifth guy is a musician, is playing music throughout. So you have four actors doing the various roles. Now the stories are taken from all over the world. Some of them sort of have feel like fables, some like parables, and some are based on true stories. I don't think there's any sort of real connection between all of them, other than that even though they're quite small stories, they do feel quite epic in their nature. And it's just a thoroughly entertaining evening. It's 75 minutes straight through. There is a bit of audience interaction, which I was involved with. So if you don't like that sort of thing, don't sit on the front row. I did get picked on quite a bit, actually, so I must have been wearing my pick on me face, I think. And it's very simple storytelling, very simple staging, no real set, just a few props, very simple costumes. You know, when they're pretending to be cows, they have rubber gloves for the udders. You know, it's all very, very simple and sort of back to theatre and storytelling, back to its basics. And it's quite refreshing. Having seen some very big, glitzy productions, it's actually nice just to go back to something that's very much about the story, with none of the distraction of anything else going on. And Catherine Hunter is superb. I absolutely loved it. I thought it was great piece of theatre.
We'll move on now to talking about The Bell Stratagem at the Southwark Playhouse. This is a play by Hannah Cowley, written in 1780. And it was quite popular at the time, but has sort of fallen into disuse, well, for the last 100 or 150 years. This is directed by Jessica Swale, who directed a rather good version of The Rivals last year, with a couple of the same cast. Robin Soane's was rather good in The Rivals last year, and he's in this play as well. It's about a young woman called Letty Hardy who has been waiting patiently for her betrothed named Doricourt, and he doesn't really like her when he turns up. They've not met since childhood, and he thinks she's a bit insipid. She's, you know, nice looking and everything, but he's really looking for somebody with more spirit, and she determines to get him back. What did you think of this, Ian?
I really enjoyed it. But it's very, very similar in style to The Rivals, which I loved, and it incorporates modern music into there's lots of music throughout the performance. But because Swale has sort of highlighted almost the feminism of Cowley's writing, she was writing at a time when women really didn't have rights, that many rights. And so what she was saying at the play was actually extremely daring for the time. And so she found a parallel in that with the music, where she'd made, they found sort of a cappella arrangements of pop songs.
Here Come the Girls, that sort of thing.
Yeah, so you've got songs by the Sugar Babes and the Spice Girls and Lily Allen, really effectively woven into, because there's some 18th century songs in there as well, but a lovely sort of, it's a lovely touch that really does work. I found it to be moving and funny and witty and extremely well performed. Christopher Logan, who was also in The Rivals as well, is hysterical. It's the sort of the gossip on whom everyone has to keep up to their to keep up with the news.
I was getting sort of almost Kenneth Williams vibes off him at some points during this play. I mean, there is a slight thing of that about him, but it might just be his rather strange face. I agree with you about the music. I think there was also a Berlin track in there. I'm not sure. I think it was Take My Breath Away, or is it
Take My Breath Away?
Yes, it was an adaptation of it. I mean, it was very nice singing. I mean, Gina Beck seems to have been in a lot of musicals. I don't know if you've come across her before. She's done various things. I think she's been in Phantom of the Opera and playing Cosette in Les Mis. But also you have Hannah Spirit, who with S Club 7 and from Primeval. It was rather interesting seeing her singing.
Are you telling me you knew who Hannah Spirit was?
Of course I know.
Or you read the book.
Spirit is, dear me.
Crikey, we're finding all sorts of things.
but as you say, I mean, it was extremely enjoyable. I mean, I think I also have to mention Maggie Steed, who is wonderful as a widow who can get, you know, who can, you almost feel that she could get these young men, because they have a lot of very pretty young men running around, you know, to being this sort of almost like a gang sometimes, you know, of these young guys who are sort of all of about the same age, all trying to either get married or just get sex. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at AYULTP, on Facebook, the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast page, and on the web at AYU-LondonTheatre.org. Thank you for listening, and goodbye.